My question does relate to business, but hang on, you'll see it at the end. Can I start with the statement? Only 6% of NHS funding in the east of England is spent on provision of mental health services. In other words, 94% is spent in acute hospitals, GPs, doctors, community services, primary care. Will each party increase spending on mental health provision? But how will they fund it? And what will they do to support people with mental health challenges to obtain employment and run businesses?
And it's quite interesting to hear the question, because it affects one in four people during their lifetimes, and I've personally seen some pretty poor responses to these issues, and I have psychologists working out of the building that I'm in Sudbury, so it's quite an interesting challenge. I'm going to point that to Stephen first.
Right, I did have this discussion a few weeks ago with the people at, there's a Mencat stand in Sudbury Market, and I had a long discussion with them, in fact I think all the candidates did as well, where I got a good briefing about what was actually happening on that. And one of the problems which came up did seem to be that if you had a physical handicap, then there seemed to be lots of support for your employment in that, in provision of ramps and wheelchair access and all the rest of it. But just because you had to have, let's say, have learning difficulties rather than a mental problem, then there didn't never seem to be the same kind of support or sympathy for people with those particular problems than you would get for the physical ones. Now, I mean, this is what basically came out of that Mencap talk, and I was quite surprised at that. Because certainly I know from the employment that I've been in where people have had breakdowns and mental problems, there always have been their welfare for them to actually resolve those as valuable employees to bring them back into full employment. So yeah, there does seem to be a hole there in employment there where we could actually look at this issue of saying, well, how do we make sure these people aren't given the attention which they deserve on this and the help and support which they have? I'm not sure how much money needs to go into that. Again, I've got no particular feel for that. But yes, I would say it would be a very good way of actually spending more money if the impression which I got from Mencap is actually the case that we're not doing enough for that. Thank you.
James.
We covered this a bit in the NHS Hustings, of course. And in terms of my own experience, it is limited in this. I have personal experience of it from a very close relative. And it was a very bleak experience indeed. A very good friend of mine once attempted to do something rather fundamental and is now a senior figure in Mind, and actually has set up part of their charity to look after firms in the city who have staff who have mental health issues. So there is a culture building around that in the workplace. My own experience was at a homeless charity called Broadway, which is now St Mungo's Broadway, where I am what's called a dragon. We have a panel of very friendly dragons, I should add, who award business grants to homeless people. And some of those cases were fairly extreme. One of them had been in prison for 18 years and only just come out, raising the obvious question, and with severe issues, but very determined. And we gave him a grant. He had a business making music, so you could make a present for someone of a song which he would write for you and record and so on. It was wonderful. Idea. So I think from what I've seen, it doesn't, you know, people can still be creative and achievers despite having these. Some of the greatest artists and business people of all time, you know, the likes of Stephen Fry, very successful people with terrible mental health issues. So you can still be successful, and I think we have to emphasise that point. I think society is getting much better, but my experience, it goes with, I think it's a consensus on this, I think still the case, if someone has mental health issues, it's not seen in the same terms as having physical health issues, and until that changes, I think it doesn't matter what you do with funding to a certain extent, you will not change the cultural approach, shall we say.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a really important issue, and it does impact on business as well. So, you know, it's when I talk about the interdependency of business and public services, that includes health, and, you know, health, having effective health services locally is fundamental to the strong society. I work part-time with homeless young people, who many of whom have mental health, and adults with learning difficulty, And I see every day how, particularly over this last year, the safety nets, important safety nets, have just been taken away from them. We have a mental health trust that is now in being under monitor. And, you know, there are some of the papers talk about it's about management. When you boil down to it, it's about 20% cuts to an already underfunded service. And, you know, you talked about 6%. And, you know, although Labour has always protected the NHS, the NHS mental health service have been underfunded for a long time under various different political parties. But what we are saying now is, no, enough is enough. We are putting mental health at the centre of our manifesto on health and social care. And we are going to particularly address the inequality, the unequal funding of children and adolescents with mental health, because that's your starting point, isn't it? And I've met adults with entrenched problems who are unable to work, but actually the behaviours that manifested themselves when they were children, they were just labelled bad or difficult and were just, you know, often kept at home. So and I've been actively involved in the campaign to save mental health services. It's something that is really important. I think in terms of investment to support people with mental health issues to get jobs, I think there's a really key role for the voluntary and community sector. I ran a charity for many years. They shouldn't be providing specialist mental health services, but they've got an added value role. And I'm deeply worried about in the current climate, the loss of grants and support to some of those organisations who are doing really, really vital work. It's something I talk about in all of my literature. It's something that matters to me, and it will be something that I lead on. It's not a minority issue. It affects one in four people. In this room, and there'll be lots of people that would have had that experience. And you know, we are absolutely committed. We need to take the private sector out of our NHS. We need to stop wasting time on commissioning and contracting. Take it back under public ownership and allow it to be the public service that we formed back in 1948.
Simon, I hadn't heard the statistic that you the 6% statistic. I hadn't heard that before, but it does make sense. It chimes with the experience of a friend of mine who had a fairly senior health service managerial job and signed himself off sick with some form of depression that remains not properly diagnosed, but was very severe. Was off work for an awful long time and then eventually got sacked, which didn't help his mental health situation. He's now pretty much on the scrappy. So he had cost his employer quite a lot of money and is now dependent on the state. And he told me that he's a very articulate, highly educated person, and he, what was available to him in terms of treatment was basically a block of 10, or maybe it was a block of 6. And it seems to be a very strange way of approaching something. That if somebody is physically ill, then they go to the doctor and they access a service. And if medicine can do anything for them, then medicine treats them until they are better. And you don't ration the number of appointments. If somebody has a mental illness, it comes as a great surprise to me, but I think it's normal. You correct me if I'm wrong, but you do get your little allocation, and you get to the end of your course of whatever it is you're being given, your course of therapy, and that's it. You're either better or you're not, and you know these things do have consequences, as Jane says, that you know that many of us suffer mental health difficulties of one form or another at different times in our lives, some much more extreme than others. We've just seen in an air crash in France, it seems apparently, how appalling the consequences of untreated mental illness can be. And, you know, we live in a world where all this is just getting worse because, you know, my parents grew up in a world where you expected to have my father expected to have a secure job for life and then go on to a decent pension, and there was a degree of security. Young people now are growing up in a world of where you're meant to bung a whole load of jobs together, you don't get paid for half of them, We live in an insecure, crowded, stressful world where it's vital that we talk about mental health and well-being ought to be right at the top of the list of the things that people for running for political office ought to talk about.
And Grace?
I think there are three kind of parts of the cycle that your question touches upon. Firstly, you know, how people are treated if they need mental health treatment, and I think that is something that the Liberal Democrats have tried to tackle the inequalities in, for example, by introducing the first ever waiting time standards and referral to treatment time standards for people with mental health problems. But there's a lot more that we need to do in that area. And secondly, the transition between unemployment, if you've got a mental health problem, to employment. And we've started to do things like, for example, putting mental health specialists in job centres so that they can give people tailored support. Again, there's a lot more that we need to do, and I think we need to reform the work capability assessment so that people with mental health problems aren't told that they're okay to work when they're not, and they don't have their benefits sanctioned without proper reason. Because I think the way that they're treated at the moment leaves a lot to be desired. Finally, once people with mental health problems are in work, or people without mental health problems are in work, I think it's really important, like we've talked about, the well-being aspect. I actually, in my last job, tried to become a mental health champion, and I held mindfulness classes for people, just to try and keep people well, but also to get people talking about mental health, because we've talked about culture change. I think that's one of the most important things, is that people aren't afraid to say that they're too stressed and they need help, and they're not afraid to talk if they've got problems. And I think it is going in the right direction. You know, we are in a more stressful world, but at the same time, I think we're becoming better at talking about our problems. So I'm optimistic in that sense.